All of the newest episodes of Note to Self are now available on the Luminary podcast app. It's free to download, and you can also listen to other podcasts from WNYC studios like Radiolab, Two Dope Queens, Snap Judgment, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, and others. Luminary Premium is the only place where you can enjoy the entire new season of Note to Self, plus new original podcasts you won't find anywhere else, from Trevor Noah, Roxane Gay, Guy Raz, Lena Dunham, and many more. And you can enjoy them ad-free. Start your free trial by going to luminary.link/note to self or download the Luminary app for free.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is New Tech City, WNYC's weekly look at how technology is changing the way New Yorkers live. I'm Anoush Zamarodi. Cleanup after Sandy continues, and those hit hardest now have to answer the question, should we rebuild? I'm looking at an interactive map just put out by the U.S. Geological Survey that shows the coastline before and after Sandy. And in some places, rebuilding may not even be an option. And with me looking at this map is Steve Romaleski, director of the mapping service at the CUNY Graduate Center. Hello, Professor.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So we're looking at this map, and it shows a lot of sand in places where it wasn't before. It feels like Sandy was a disaster that was completely mapped. We had interactive maps to see where the flooding was happening. Afterwards, there were digital maps that tracked where the power was coming on. Have you seen such map saturation before?
Recently, it's become easier for more people to make maps online because Google has developed their Google Earth and Google Maps platforms, and others have made it easier to create, you know, basic base maps of street grids and aerial photographs online, and then to overlay or to put your data on top of that to see where it is in relation to everything else. So it's really exploding.
You're talking a lot about the public getting involved in making maps. What are the pluses and minuses of this explosion of mapping? Are there any dangers to all this mapping that we're simplifying complex data?
Well, that's definitely a risk. There's a great book by a Syracuse professor, Mark Monmanier, called How to Lie with Maps, and he wrote it in the 90s, and it's still valid today. And his point is that all maps lie, in effect. You can't completely accurately represent what's happening on the Earth's surface on a 2D, 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, or even online. And so you have to decide as the map maker or as the person who's putting together a mobile application, let's say, of what to include and what not to include. And when you include it, how to portray it accurately and meaningfully and in a way that doesn't misconstrue or distort the underlying data, because all of this is based on underlying databases, that makes it more flexible and powerful, but it also risks making it easier to mess up. It's easier to make bad maps.
What is technology making possible with mapping that we couldn't have done previously?
Well, I think the combination of just the web itself and the web being more powerful and more robust that enables us to display bigger and bigger data sets online and have more flexibility in terms of displaying data sets, and also open source technologies, the ability for anyone who's got some programming know-how to customize an application to make it do what they want rather than waiting for a company that they pay money to change it to do what they want. And that combination of things has really exploded in terms of the options now that you have, where more and more people can make maps online, more and more people can analyze data, more and more people can put data sets together in different ways that, you know, we didn't think of before. So we'll see. Sky's the limit.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it changes the whole way I see the world in my relation to it. I mean, I even have an app on my phone that's called What's Around Me, and it's constantly changing. So is that – what does that do in terms of our society?
Maps, going back, you know, let's say 10, 20, 30 years or longer, were predominantly about the physical environment. And you would look at an area and you would hopefully understand it a little bit better. Now it's becoming more and more about where you are and what's around you, because you can immediately customize that very easily and you can see where you are and what's around you. So, yeah, it very much changes the dynamic and it very much changes how people think of the world.
Professor Steven Romaleski, thank you so much.
Thank you.
To see the interactive map that we're looking at that shows the coastline pre and post Sandy, go to our website at wnyc.org/tech. And you can also see some of Professor Romaleski's work at urbanresearch.org/projects. So that's how high-tech maps are being constructed. But what about older maps, the ones done in pen and paper? How can they continue to be used? One place with a huge collection of old maps is the New York Public Library. Cartographers there are working with the library's labs department to not only put these maps online, but make them usable in a digital age.
Okay, so I'm in the stacks of the map section of the library, and there are parchments rolled up everywhere, and there are lots of those filing cabinets that have long, thin, flat drawers, obviously stuffed full with maps. But one of the major projects of the New York Public Library Lab is to rethink ways of putting all the information on all of these maps to work digitally.
My name is Matt Knutson. I'm the geospatial librarian of the New York Public Library. I oversee the map collection. 20 years ago, you come into a map library, you might leaf through a folder of maps, and you might find something you're interested in. Maybe that's the end of your journey. We now have a queryable version of this atlas. So you can search for historical addresses, you can search for different material types on buildings, you can find things that have been buried in the historical record on this old piece of paper. We're looking right now at the area where the Brooklyn Bridge was built, and this apparently is where George Washington lived.
If they were still there, they'd be living on the off-ramp to the FDR Drive, basically.
That's right. We allow any users from the outside to come in, process these images in what we call map warping in the sort of vernacular, and it's called geo-rectification for those who are technically inclined.
Woo!
I know, big term. We took it a step further. We took it one step beyond just indexing maps in Google Earth and allowing people to actually stretch historical maps onto contemporary maps. You know, in our case, 400 years of New York City history are represented on these maps, and they can sort of metaphorically be peeled back like an onion. So you can discover your place at a given time. Somebody comes across the beam in an old ship, and they want to know why it's there 4 or 5 blocks in from the river, right? So they can come consult maps, and they can see that, in fact, the place where that ship is buried was a coastline at a particular given moment in time. What it really does is it allows us to create a virtual model of the past.
You can find a link to the library's maps and the map warper at our website, wnyc.org/tech. And while you're there, tell us, where have you seen some cool mapping technology at work? You can also tell us on Twitter at New Tech City. I'm Anusha Marodi, and this is New Tech City from WNYC.